21 minutes after the hour 4, and that is Something Soweto, and the song is Akana Mali. Father Rakaketsi, good afternoon and welcome.
Oh, thank you very much. Very strange to be here.
It's good to have you here. We've been trying to get you here because a few weeks ago we had Sister Hemenegut, and Simba kept on saying, we need to get Father Patrick. And he's been trying to juggle our diaries, and here we are. But it's a pleasure. Thank you very much for accepting our invitation, and we look forward to chatting with you this afternoon.
No, this is great. And I knew when Sister was coming, and I could foresee that something is going on. I tried to run away for a couple of weeks. Nobody could get hold of me. But,
but you know us, ne? We make things happen. So if you've just tuned in, our guest in studio this afternoon is Father Patrick Tseho Rakaketsi. He is a stigmatine. He was born in Lesotho, and he joined the stigmatine fathers in 1990.
That's a long time ago, isn't it?
Let me tell you, 1990. What was I doing in 1990? I think 1990. Yo, I'm going to expose my age. 1990, I was in primary school. Yeah, I was about to finish grade 7. Yeah, 1990.
Now, maybe. Listeners know what Father Brian is.
But it, after you ordained Father Patrick, ne? We are told you then went to Tanzania, and you did a little stint in Tanzania, and you then came back. You went for studies in Rome, and we are told you majored in dogmatic. Is it systematic or dogmatics?
Well, in secular theology, they call it systematic theology, but Rome calls it dogmatic
theology. Dogmatic theology. Okay. Yeah. And you came back, and you did a stint at the seminary John Vianney in Pretoria. And you started teaching there.
You call them stints. That's 10 full years of lecturing. 10 years of lecturing. That's not a stint.
Training future priests. And you finish that, and you are made the vice provincial, which is basically the major superior of the region here. And you do that stint for about 6 years, I'm told. And after those 6 years, you then ended up at the Bishops' Conference as the Associate Secretary General. So you're basically the SG, but an Associate SG to some extent, right?
I am assisting the SG, the Secretary General.
But your job is Associate Secretary General. Yeah.
And I think it is interesting for the listeners to know that I'm occupying the seat which was occupied by the great Father Emil Blazer. He did a long time in my office.
6 years.
So we always call each other predecessor, successor.
I know he's listening. And then did you, I would like to take you back maybe to 1979. Did you dream that you would end up from the mountains of Lesotho, from the mountains of Maseru, did you dream that you'd end up in Waterkloof? Because you're now in Waterkloof, yeah.
I wouldn't even have dreamt to be a priest at that time. Mm-hmm. I was just a young boy. In fact, just to make it interesting, we are four boys in my family. Mm-hmm. And I'm the third born. And the first two would have told the parents they wanted to be priests. Mm-hmm. And so what did they do, the parents, in those ages, you know, 60s and the 70s? They would have taken them to the minor seminary.
Yes.
And incidentally, even the last born coming after me, he saw the eldest brother going. He wanted to be a priest as well.
Yeah.
And guess who didn't want?
Yourself.
Myself. I didn't want. I never wanted to be a priest because I thought it's a boring lifestyle. I would see this parish priest and I would say to my mom, no, I would rather be a lawyer.
Okay.
And I didn't even have a term lawyer. I used to call myself a magistrate.
Okay. Yes, that was very ambitious child.
Yeah, that was the term I was using.
Yeah.
And therefore, my mother never even dared to bring me to the minor seminary. So I stayed home. I did my primary, and I did my high school from home. Mm-hmm. And at the end, actually, they took me to a hostel, you know, cook for yourself and stay by yourself and go and learn because you want to be this magistrate thing.
Yeah.
And I was always glued to books, you know, newspapers, and that was me.
Mm. That so how did you get here? How did you get here then?
And in my matric, what do you call Form 5,
yes.
and there is this priest, the Indian parish priest, who was victimized by the students. And this guy was always coming to me and telling me that you would make a good priest. Why did he come to me? It's because my mother was a chairperson of the parish council for 13 full years.
Ooh, I don't want to picture Mary again.
So there she is being told every time.
So she had to have a son as a priest, obviously.
You know, and he was always saying to her, you know, somebody must be a priest. But then she said, there are three there already in the minor seminary. This one does not want. Mm-hmm. But he was coming to me saying, no. What did he do? He took me to be an altar server.
Okay.
And pushed me there. I never wanted, but I did it. I think two to three years I was an altar server. But when he was victimized and he said that he was taken back home, something dropped into my heart to say, this man wanted me to be a priest. Should I not open a new ear to listen?
Yeah.
And I went to my parents to tell them, look, listen, I want to be a priest.
At that time, did you know what kind of a priest you wanted to be? Did you even know the difference between the different, if I may call them, brands of priests that are out there?
You know, I was 16 years old, but I knew very well I wanted to be in a community. I wanted to be a religious.
Okay.
And I knew very well that I don't want to, you know, beat about the bush. I don't want to go, because I declined also the offer. I declined. They never even started. But I declined the registration with the university, which was there already. And I was with the Brothers of the Sacred Heart as the school. And then they were, you know, I was in the top 10.
Yeah.
And we were supposed to be in the university. And I told brother, I'm not going there because I want to be a priest. And of course, I knew where I wanted to go.
What was your understanding of priesthood at the time, besides seeing the sacraments being celebrated?
As, you know, it was very strange with me because there was this figure of this man who always inspired me, telling me this. And then I started going back to what he was saying time and again, what he was talking to me about. And I started to figure him. And I saw myself as a replacement of this priest who is gone.
So you sort of felt sorry and thought, look, the church needs us. I went to a workshop where an old Dominican priest had come with a beard, and this priest was very dirty. And you know what? I really felt sorry for the Dominicans. I thought, you know what? I think I'll go.
poor things.
Poor things, you know. And I thought, you know what? They need a bit of new life. Yeah. And I thought, this is what my fuse later. But I'm just teasing. But there are so many reasons that attract us to the priesthood. And then you join the Stigma Teens.
No, I haven't finished. Because then, when I was so determined to be a priest, to go and study, then my mother, 13 years, a parish chairperson, stands by me and says, whom are you fooling? Who is fooling who here? Mm-hmm. You told us that you don't want this thing. Mm-hmm. Today, you are busy here.
Yeah.
For the first time, I saw so-called boss barat, a meeting of the family. Yeah. First time.
Yeah.
Everybody here. My brothers, everybody's grumbling. Because why? What do you want to do? We thought we are having
the magistrate,
you, and nobody wants to support my idea, and only my father, my late father, he stood by me. Said, if he wants to go, let him go, and he has my word. And that was the end of the meeting.
Okay, where were the Stigma Teens at this point?
Now, Stigma Teens is a very strange thing. Stigma Teens, apart from me, because I have my cousin as a Stigma Teen, but we never talked with him about this thing. He knew as well that this guy does not want... He was talking to my other brothers.
Mm-hmm.
But Stigma Teens were coming in. They were having workshops, vocation workshops, time and again, because one of the priests was a novice master with the oblates for a couple of years. So he knew... where to touch and so on. He had a connection with the priests, and so he was holding these workshops. And then I got hold of that contact. And his name is Father Giuliano Melotto.
Yeah.
Stigma Teen is a great vocation promoter. I think most of us seniors, Stigma Teens today, we came through him. He was coming to our families, and since he knew the Raki Ketsi, and then suddenly he came over to visit, and we were greeting, and I just told him, give me your address. Then the next thing, he wrote me back.
Yes.
And he says, no, we have a workshop in this period. Please come over. Mm-hmm. And that's how I started to move on. And incidentally, we started our pre-novitiate on the day when Nelson Mandela was released
Okay, that in 1990.
Yeah. We started our apprenticeship on that day, and it was a great euphoria, you know, and we called it a providence that we are starting something new with our lives and a new opening of the life, you know, within our country.
Yeah. Wow. If you've just tuned in, it is exactly 4:30, and it is Radio Veritas 576 AM. I'm joined in studio by Father Patrick Rakaketsi, who is the Associate Secretary General at the South African Catholic Bishops Conference. And if you've just tuned in, please do not touch that dial. We'll take a musical break. 25 minutes before the hour 5, and this is the St. John Vianney Choir, your next door neighbor's one. And we're joined in studio by the Associate Secretary General, and we're getting up close and personal. So anyway, we are going to skip and we're going to jump your story, because there's so much to talk about your story and your calling. And we fast forward to the point where you joined the Stigma Teens and you're ordained, and your first mission or your internship, you're sent to Tanzania.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I was ordained 5th of September. You should mention that.
Okay.
5th of September, 1998.
Okay.
That makes me 19 years as a priest.
We should be organizing jubilees.
Jubilees are coming, you know.
Yeah.
20 years in 2018. Mm-hmm. It has been
That's an achievement.
Fascinating story. Fascinating time. 20 years have just passed. As you say,
yeah,
it started basically in Tanzania. And it's very also interesting. I get ordained on the 5th of September.
Okay.
And I'm supposed to leave for Tanzania within a week.
Okay.
And I'm told you can only go have a Thanksgiving Mass, basically in your own home parish,
yes,
and maybe your family, but no 1 month of these long celebrations.
Holidays.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Holidays, yeah. And so you don't have. Why? Because the job that you are being assigned to needed you 6 months back,
okay,
a year ago.
Yes.
And that tells you that I was appointed to be a manager of the great school there, St. Gaspar Petroni. Our founder is named after him,
okay,
high school. And I was nominated, or even, let me say, assigned to be a manager of the school while I was in third year theology. And I was told by my superior, this is sub secreto pontificio. Thou shalt tell no one.
Of
so
course.
My colleagues, my classmates, nobody knows that I have already
a job.
Mm-hmm. And that was even before my final profession.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking to myself, does he think that I will make it? So it was already there that, okay, I'm going to make final profession.
Which anyway brings us to the next point, because here you are already at that young age, you're being entrusted with a responsibility.
Yeah.
And this is something, when I was reading your profile, that I've noticed as a theme and a pattern in your life, where you've always been in leadership and you've always been entrusted with that ministry of service.
That's the, if we have to call a culprit,
yes,
it is a man called Father Michele Danucci.
Mm.
May his soul rest in peace. He's the one who was shot dead by gangsters
in
Soshanguve.
Yeah.
Our martyr, really, the man who had a great vision.
Yes.
And he told me as well that, you know, we go to Tanzania and I'm sending you, young as you are, because we are building the future around the young people.
Mm.
And so go and, you know, be a pioneer. So I was a pioneer of among the missionaries who were there. I was stigmatized missionaries. I was the pioneer as a young one. Mm. And I arrived there. They called me, they were calling me in Swahili, Kijana Padre. Kijana Padre means a boy father.
Oh, you know? The young one, yeah.
The young one.
Mutoto.
Mutoto, you know,
exactly, yeah.
A boy father. And,
yes.
And literally in a very, sarcastic way, because here I am around the missionaries with big beards and great experience, and then they call him father, a small boy there. And people were always saying, a boy father, you know. And I learned around the church that people say, by mistake, they mentioned during the notices in the church,
yes,
oh yeah, the mass, next Sunday mass will be
Saint,
held by
a small boy. The so, things we go through,
you know, and that they told me how to, you know, they taught me how to learn the language very quick.
Mm.
That's now, when I came through.
Do you see yourself, if I was to ask you, what is your purpose in life? What would you say is your purpose at this stage in your life?
to serve the people of God. That's really the purpose. Looking at what has happened into me, as I tell you, what I wanted in life never happened, and I was taken into because of the events of life, and somebody was there, and you know, it says God sent instrument to tell me where I'm supposed to go, and I said, if I didn't do it in the way I wanted, then God wants me to serve. That's all.
Indeed, and when one listens to the story of your life, because after you come back from Tanzania, you then go back for further studies. You go for further studies in Rome, and you come back and you start working in formation, which is also a very difficult department in our life.
It's rolling in that way because I come back from Rome, and in fact, I'm being told that you need to come back because we need to continue with formation. And so the 2 more years that I was supposed to continue with are cut short. When I come and I'm being told the formation is waiting for you, the house is full. Yes. We have 24
young men
in all levels, from philosophy, theology, and so on. And you are supposed to be their formator. And some of them are the priests that people know today.
We won't name them.
Some of them are here, their names around.
We won't name them. We won't name them. We won't name Bob Paul. But anyhow, Bob Paul, Bob Richard.
All these the rookies that I started with. And they gave me a very really good foundation because I came in as a brother. I came to them as their father in the sense of formator. But also as you know, a God sent man into their lives, you know.
And then you sort of move further to serve them in a different capacity because you then became their vice provincial.
Immediately, and they were so sad because.
I look forward to changing formators in Formation House.
They were so sad to lose somebody who was, you know, closer to them, and they were not sure what the future.
Indeed.
Then I said, well, look, I'm changing the roles. I'm still going to become a formator in a different level now. For everyone now, even the older or the oldest of the fellows, I'm going to be their formator as well. And I thank those years of formation with the brothers because then they taught me how to listen.
Okay.
I learned a big lesson of
And listening in this regard, meaning what? Because listening is it just a conversation? What does listen mean?
Listening goes way beyond conversation, goes way beyond talking, goes way beyond looking at the person. Listening is understanding, empathizing, sympathizing, going deep into somebody's level, and reflecting with the human being together. And, you know, going right into their background, right into their families, and even in their intentions. Some of the people that I came across, they would tell me that today, the father, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be a priest.
Wow.
You know?
Wow. So how then did you end up at the headquarters, ne? How did you end up a union building? No, it's because people always ask these questions. How do people end up? But in your case, how did you end up with the union buildings of the church at Khanya House?
I actually don't know. And I think that question was asked by the cardinal on the very first day I came into the office. Because there was a meeting there, and I came to be introduced.
Yeah.
And he laughed at me and said, "Do you know why you ended up here?"
Yeah.
And I don't know. I said, "I'm not sure." Mm-hmm. But the only thing I remember is when I was a president of the Major Superiors,
yes,
we used to meet as an executive with the bishop's board.
Okay.
And we had met with them, and I didn't know many of the bishops.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a case that we needed to discuss.
Okay.
And it was a very, very hot topic. It was the topic of priests becoming sangomas.
Yes.
And we had come with a proposal how to deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
We had come with a proposal as well of going back to joint witness, putting bishops and major superiors together. So I was carrying this. This was a history, but it went lost. So we were recovering it, and we said, let's go back and just discuss together with the bishops how to deal with this problem, because there were also nuns becoming sangomas. It was a very
sensitive
topic. So can we come together? So maybe one of the things we need to do is just to have not only small topics, but general.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have together. And unfortunately, the bishops were not there yet to say it's okay.
Yeah, let's talk
and
about it.
And I got
it.
Grilled
yeah.
by the cardinal as a president of
this
the
major superior.
Of the major superiors. What? Why do you want this? Mm-hmm. I stood my ground to say, no, this the church needs this at this time.
Okay.
And I don't know if that is what he meant when he said, well, do you know why you ended up here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but just to say, one of the, not said so often, and I think it's the first time I want to disclose this today.
Yeah.
And
on air, changing gear.
So let's change the gear.
Yes, yeah.
I was approached by the Troika, the top three of the bishops.
True.
Mm. Way back in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still a superior of my own congregation.
Okay.
And I was still the president of the major superiors.
Mm-hmm.
And I was approached in a very confidential manner.
As when I finish
my term,
mm-hmm.
would I be available to be Associate Secretary General.
Okay.
And I said, well, when the church needs me, I'm always available.
Yes.
But then by the time that you are looking for me, I won't be a superior. Then I cannot take a decision. You will have to talk to my higher superiors by then, you mm-hmm. know. And I think they did some talk with the Stigmatins.
Mm-hmm.
But the Stigmatins did not allow me to, at 2011 to come in.
Okay.
So I thought the whole thing was gone.
Okay.
Because then I was told by the bishops that no, and your congregation does not allow you to be our Secretary General.
Mm.
And then 3 years later,
They came back. Yeah.
And let me tell you where I was asked.
Yeah.
At a very awkward place.
Yeah.
At a very awkward moment.
Give us the details. Give us details, Mother.
This is on the... I'm a parish priest by then. This is 2013.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, 2014.
Yeah.
I'm a parish priest in the great parish of St. John the Baptist in Pretoria North.
Uh-huh.
And we had prepared our people to go to the ordination of Bishop Palana in Klerksdorp.
Yeah.
And we have a great pastoral plan for the year 2015. Mm-hmm. We had made it very nice. If you want to take a break so that we make a suspense, we suspend the people to know what happened.
It's 14 minutes before the hour 5, and if you've just tuned in, it is Radio Veritas 576 AM. It's that only Catholic radio station in the country that gives you good news, and today we're giving you good people and good music for a change, and please do not touch that dial.